You're listening to Marcus Sahaba Online Radio Podcast.
8:33 Central African Time, and at that time of the evening where you join us on the segment Driving with Anwar on his beautiful segment, and as it caught the eye of Abu Bakr, see that it catches the eye of all our listeners throughout the world, and they really look forward to that. And the beauty of having Anwar Qasim on this segment, he's also an economist, he's also a world-class motor mechanic and a brilliant businessman. Anwar Qasim, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, and jazakallah khairah for joining us on After Dinner Mints and your segment Driving with Anwar.
Wa alaikum salam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Alhamdulillah, brother Shafat, always a pleasure to be on the platform with you.
Always great to have you on the track. Yeah, you are someone that keeps us up to speed, and hey, you know how to motor. You got a lot of horsepower in you, and you bring it alive on the platform of Marcus Sahaba, the voice of the Ahl Sunnah wal Jama'ah. Now, Anwar, you know, any topic, people gather around you, and you're just so comfortable with these topics. Like, you look at the earth now weighs 6 Rona, R-O-N-N-A, Rona grams. What's this new Rona grams and new metric prefixes are voted in? Talk to me about this earth weighing more. Why? More people? Or what's happening? More iron from the skies falling on the earth? So what's going on, Anwar?
No, definitely not. You know, Brother Shafat, if we go back to our school days, we remember we had our table itself, you know, roughly like 1 kilometer, 1,000 meters as such. A group was set up. It was actually called the Psi Group in 1960. When I say Psi, it's more like a physics type of term, Psi, you know. And they had the 27th conference in France. Now, when you come to, you know, apparently the world weighs 6 Rona, you know, grams. And it's very hard to actually contemplate what are we talking about. But really speaking, they have actually defined new measurements. You know, if you look at a byte itself when it comes to computers, or if you look at the weight of the world itself, you know. So they've actually found two different forms, I should say, four different terms, I would say, that was actually incorporated in 27 countries. I mean, the summit that was held in France actually included 27 different countries. And this became one of the so-called marathons because they actually to do with measurements and weights. Now, if we look at Ronagrams, 6 Ronagrams, it's something that where you add, you put a 6 with 27 zeros behind it. And, you know, the usual kiloliters and the milliliters and such, that is actually transformed to Rona and Tretra. Those are obviously for large numbers. If you look at small numbers, you're looking at Bronto and Crypto. Now, you know, it seems very Latinish names, obviously, but obviously, you know, I think we need a new form of measurements, you know, because it's becoming very difficult. If you look at millions and billions, if you look at Zimbabwe, they start printing money to trillion, and, you know, if you ask the person offhand how many zeros, the person will be stumped. So that is the reason they came up with these new terms for weight and measurements. So it becomes easy, but obviously, we'll have to grasp these measurements because we are not used to these, you know, this new pronunciations and these new variations that they came out. But I suppose, you know, being scientists in this group, they found that it was most likely and in the best interest of the world, you know, to actually use these new denominations to simplify things and make things easier for the layman out there. So I'm sure, you know, our school kids in the very, very near future will be studying all these things, Brother Shafat.
Absolutely brilliant, Anwar, and your lecturing skills came to the fore, and I really enjoyed that you already simplified that for us. From owning McDonald's to farming, and this is our president, Cyril Ramaphosa, you know, from owning McDonald's, and now he's gone into farming cattle. How the president, Cyril Ramaphosa, built a 64 billion rand fortune. Anwar, 64 billion, and it seems like you're still hungry for more. They say the thirst for wealth is like drinking salt water. The more you drink, the thirstier you become. Your thoughts?
You know, before I actually commence with this topic, it reminds me of Donald Trump, you know. And Donald Trump, I think most of us are aware that he came from an estate agent background because his dad was a very successful estate agent. Do you know, Brother Shafat, if he never touched the money that he inherited, he would have been worth four times more today. You know, and even if you refer to Donald Trump as a businessman, you know, because he came up with so many different innovations, you know, Trump Towers as such, and so many other business ventures he actually went into. But he also got bankrupt so many times, you know. So truth be told, Donald Trump himself is not really a successful businessman because he would have been worth so much more. Now, if you look at our president, and the reason I actually brought the first topic up was because our president should have stuck to, I personally believe, what he was good at, and that is business. As you mentioned, $6.4 billion is a lot of wealth to accumulate, you know. He was actually born in 1952 in Soweto, for our listeners out there who doesn't really know much of our president. And he was born to a very modest family. His father was a retired policeman, you know. At the age of 28, he became the Secretary General of the National Union of Mine Workers. Then at the age of 39, he became Secretary General of the ANC. In 2001, if I remember clearly, he joined the New Africa Investment, and that is where he started making money, because they were actually, he formed the Sanduha Group. And under that group, he had stakes in mining, in McDonald's, in the Coca-Cola bottling plant. And from there, his investment just grew so much so that he actually sat on the board of Max Steel and so many other different companies. Business was one. I know MTN, and I think, I don't think I remember all of them, but I remember Mondi was also on the listing, you know. So he had a very, very good directorship as such, and being chairman, sitting on boards and all these companies, when he had most of these companies, he had a 30% stake on this, you know. So in 2014, he actually stepped down, and then obviously we all know the power, it works two ways. One is, you know, he's got that farm that seems to be very, very successful. I know one of his tool, this Longhorn, you know, thing that he actually grows in there, you know, I think fetched about 1.8 million as such. And then we have the scandal that 64 million rands of our somebody's money actually was found in his furniture for some of these. I mean, you know, Brother Shafat, talking about furniture, that's the type of furniture I want to buy. I wouldn't mind investing 5 grand and reaping 64 million inside the furniture. But anyway, that's it. Furniture, you know, being a businessman, very, very successful. And according to the latest report, you know, they say he doesn't really get much of an income. I suppose most of his money is invested. The only income he's getting is the 3 million rands annually that he gets paid, obviously with all the benefits and perks as president of this country. And he has no other vested interest at this very moment, because he had to actually put that on shelf until, you know, or whenever his reign actually expires as such. Then I suppose he'll either retire, because considering he just turned 70 years old, you know, this year. So I think he's actually past the retirement age in South Africa, you know, be it as a president and be it as a person, because I suppose, you know, once you reach a 63, 65 years old age group, then you're actually forced to retire and you're going part-time. But yet we've got a full-time president, alhamdulillah, you know, that is still fit and still last life off and still create inflation and create things, you know, where monetary value has absolutely no value whatsoever. Mm. And not forgetting the petrol price, Brother Shafat.
Yeah, not forgetting the country is imploding, and he's sitting there with King Charles and Sunak. Yeah, I don't know what he's up to, but anyway, you can see who his bosses are. And then you watch the taxis. I read one article this afternoon, taxi found full of explosives, and a taxi strikes there in Cape Town, and they're bringing burning buses and so forth. And it, this article says how much it costs to own and operate a taxi. I said the taxis were owned by a mafia cartel. Talk to us about this industry, Anwar, because they definitely, they hold the government to ransom. And, you know, on many of our programs, he said that these are people that have their own laws. It's our way or the highway. Even on the highway, they don't let you drive on the right-hand side. They tell you, hey, flashing lights, move over, move over. Where you move over, Anwar? Talk to us.
You know, a very good example. I was 19 years old, Brother Shafat, and I opened a furniture factory on a taxi rank. It was a big premises and everything, 19 years old, my first business whatsoever. And I actually had it for about 2 years, you know. The time I remember foil board came out, I used to make dining room sets, you know. So it was okay, you know, for the period of time. And the fear I used to have, being 19 years old, yet I possessed a firearm. For the first few days, I carried the firearm to work, because everyone was a suspect, because you could see the violence that was taking place, you know, just looking over to the onto the taxi rank, you know. And then somebody told me, he says, you know what, get the taxi chief in your place, be friends with him, and you'll be untouchable. Prince Shafat, you'll never believe it. For the first few days, I carried a firearm. Thereafter, I felt so safe, because as long as the taxi chief speaks to you or shakes your hand and people get to witness it, you are safe. They protect you, you know. So whether it's mafia related as such, I'm not really sure. But I know for 2 years, alhamdulillah, I never had a single incident in the taxi lane, you know. So people used to tell me, well, how do you, you know, have a business right on the taxi lane? And in my mind and heart, I knew I was very protected and safe because I knew the taxi chief. Okay, a lot has changed since then. Now, if you look at the taxi industry, we've got about an average, I think, 250,000 taxis in our South African roads. Out of the 250,000, about 170,000 is actually virtually old taxis, not even insured, I would put it, you know. And I'll use the inverted commas, not all that new. And there's only 80,000 taxis that is actually virtually new, that installments is being paid on, and they are basically insured, bottom line, you know. So we have 170,000 chance of getting hit by taxi demand, not be insured, you know. So obviously it happens to everyone, nobody seems to care, pay whatever. According to the books, you know, they say an average taxi owner makes about 6,000 net profit a month. Now, one needs to consider, if you look at the Toyota diesel itself, it sells for about the highest I'm talking about. It actually sells for about 528,000. That gives us a rough estimate of about 16,300 rand a month when it comes to installments. Now, that installments has to actually come out first. Then, if you look at the increase in fuel, that adds another 6,000 rand into the unforeseen budget itself. So they need to actually turn over quite a bit of money. Whether 6,000 that's written on the books, you know, really is, you know, true or not, I really can't tell you, Shafaf, because I'm not in the taxi industry. But when it comes to the commuters itself, you know, it's one of the, according to, a study that was done, it is one of the most reliable, efficient, and the cheapest mode of transport from A to B at the present moment. You know, so I suppose that is why the taxi industry will always grow. The taxi association itself is associated. They got their own panel beat in place, I would say, where they actually refurbish taxis. And if you look at last year alone, they refurbished 4,450 taxis in 1 year alone, which has actually put back on the road. And they employ an average of 575 people. So they're actually an umbrella company, you know, that stems from a bigger company that cycles all the way down to the taxi operator. So that is why most or virtually everyone has to be associated with a taxi association. They basically make a 5%, an average of a 5% income per taxi, you know. Whether the taxi industry is actually something that a person would want to venture, I personally would say no, not in this time of day, because it is gone. It's very much like the tow truck business, where, you know, they have areas demarcated and then you have pirating on the other side. And you're talking about the burning of buses and stoning and the burning of taxis. This is all in-house fighting, whether you raised it or not. It's all to do with the goods. Everyone seems to be chasing money. So it is not a viable option, because if you have to weigh one's life on one side and the few thousand rands that you might earn on the other side, Bershafat, not at this present moment, no.
Yeah, and the tragedy of the whole situation is that they don't pay taxes, Ahmed, Anwar. They don't pay taxes. They actually are getting away with everything. Even when it comes to fuel, I believe the government subsidizes them. How true is that, Anwar?
Very, very true. I remember, I think about a year ago or so, there was a taxi strike, you know, and it really went viral on all the different social media platforms. And, you know, you'll find that there's a strike for a few hours, and next thing you'll only hear the cost dispersed in, which I find very, very odd, because they are stubborn. They will never move out of anything. Obviously, somebody came to the party and somebody, you know, bowed down in the sense where they were allocated whatever the needs or the wants were at that time, you know. And every time there's a threat of, blockades or such, you'll actually realize it goes viral once again and nothing materializes out of it. So, first of all, when it comes to holding the government or the Minister of Transport, accountable, I suppose they're the best people to do it. But also, you know, we must also favor them in a very good way. Because if you remember, if we had to reflect back, to the rioting and the looting that we took that took place. You know, the taxi association actually went into all the settlements and they actually retrieved a lot of stolen goods, you know. So, alhamdulillah, you know, they also benefited the society at that period of time, you know, because obviously we were lawlessness and we had no government, we had no police force, we definitely didn't have the army, you know. So, alhamdulillah, you know, that taxi association actually came forward for us and I suppose they earned my respect at that period of time.
Yeah, you know, when you talk about the July unrest, yeah, you were right in the forefront, Anwar. And, you know, looking back at it, what memories do you have of it?
Honestly, it's all good memories. Okay, a lot of people might have lost their lives. And the one thing the government did not account for, you know, now, irrespective of the agenda, you know, we all have mixed thoughts when it comes to the agenda of the government because, really speaking, we will look after the cops. The SADF was nowhere to be seen. They only surfaced 3 days later, unarmed. You know, there was so much of negatives, but obviously that is for another time. But the one thing it brought about is togetherness, brotherhood. You know, irrespective of religions, we stood as on one platform. There were no differences. There were no race differences. And alhamdulillah, you know, Shafat, it brought together a togetherness that actually groomed us. You know, if and all Maximus, you know, it must never happen, that if something like this ever surfaces again, I think everyone in this country knows the rightful place, you know, knows exactly what they did, the places they manned at that period of time, and they will take the rightful place. And alhamdulillah, you know, I mean, we were back to back with every religious group, every racial group, and you know what, it went so well that I think it created a certain amount of brotherhood and a lot of friendships were actually created that period of time that actually we still possess at this period of time. So alhamdulillah, you know, Brother Shafat, as sad as it may be because of lives that were lost, businesses, you know, a lot of money, a lot of people lost, you know, their life savings, whatever it is, a lot of good also came out of it. So I think the government knows exactly his stance. If he had to ever pull something like this again, I think he's well aware that he wasn't needed then, and he definitely won't be needed again.
Yeah, well said, Anwar. And then you look at the festive warning. You always, you know, we from Lighty Days, we've been watching these billboards. Don't drink and drive. Speed kills. But the alcohol will be number one seller. And the hypocrisy of these, you know, alcohol outlets and these manufacturers of alcohol. What goes through your mind when you see this hypocrisy year in and year out, Anwar?
You know, that is a disappointing factor because it's lies blatantly thrown at you, at your face, which you must absorb. And if you look at cigarettes, you know, it has to be a certain measurement on the cigarette carton itself. You know, cigarette pack or smoking kills and X, Y, and Z. Alcohol is exactly the same thing. You know, at the bottom of all the billboards you'll find. But we also know for a fact that alcohol and cigarettes bring about the most amount of revenue for any government, you know. So it's just a lie to our faces blatantly. He knows alcohol actually does a lot of harm. He knows exactly alcohol is to blame for a lot of road deaths, you know. But irrespective, it only takes one accident and then you'll find the Minister of Transport will go and he blurt something, the Minister of Police will go. He can barely talk, unfortunately, but we try to grasp a few words of his, and which really doesn't make sense even when we grasp it, you know. So the sad part is innocent lives are being lost on our roads, Brother Shafat. So obviously alcohol is a no-go zone. Those who partake in it, you know what, that should be done, I think, in secrecy, I would say. You know, do it behind your own doors. Do whatever you have to do. I would really never know what it feels like. Whatever it does for whichever, I'm sure intoxication is something that blurs the mind. I suppose it most probably gives them a feeling of relaxation, or I have no idea. Because all I see is alcohol actually disturbs a person's mental well-being. And I actually see them go out there, killing some people, draw their firearms, shoot unruly. So there's so much of negatives that comes out of it. But yet we still sell it openly. Why don't we restrict it? I mean, look at the age groups. I mean, today, school kids are actually drunk at school, Baruch Shafran. So what restrictions are we talking about, you know? So obviously, the curfews or the legislation that's been placed on alcohol is so severe, it really doesn't matter, you know, to anyone, because really it's a money spinner basically for those who sell it, and those who consume it, I suppose it gives them a rush, as you may put it, you know. So it's a win-win for those category people. But really for us out there, the innocent, you know, bystanders or civilians, you know, who doesn't consume, doesn't know what it feels like, I just think it's unfair and unjust from the government sending all the way to the people who sell it. You know, certain periods of time, they should actually sell it in moderation, not in the way it is, just because they need to earn extra income, because that small extra income that they might earn, you know, might just cost somebody's life out there.
Well, well said there, Anwar, and, you know, your knowledge are really coming to the fore this evening. And also the yo-yo effect for vehicle sales in South Africa. Why is that so? I mean, the price of, I mean, diesel going up or down, I think is going, they say up, and I don't know, just recently I read something else. Is that diesel thing like a yo-yo for me too? Anwar, and what's your thoughts on the yo-yo effect for vehicle sales in South Africa?
You know, it's quite a number of contributing factors, actually, when we have to consider the sales, you know, be it secondhand and be it new. I mean, we all know the inflation rate is an all-time high, you know. We also know that Transnet, you know, they went on a downing tools, I think, in October sometime. And from that time, the new and used car sales, actually, the export car sales actually slumped, because for just over 2 weeks, the ports were closed. And then we have load shedding on the other side, or power outages, as you may put it in very, very nice terms. You know, we find that we have that actually that stops production on one side. You know, we have so many other contributing factors. You know, if you look at the monetary system at home itself, it's taking a big strain in everyone's home, you know, because of inflation, because of taxes, because of load shedding, because of unemployment. So all these are contributing factors to the so-called yo-yo effect on the car sales. I mean, this is obviously going to streamline to every industry. Look at the furniture industry, the electronics industry. And I mean, I think all our listeners know, I mean, this Black Friday is so publicized, you know, for the last few weeks, and we're still in November. You know, generally we should have the Black Friday to come, you know, and now everyone seems to be having Black Friday, you know, and the saddest part about Black Friday, Brother Shafat, you know, a lot of people don't seem to understand. And it's actually a demeaning thing, really speaking. If you go back in history, Black Friday was when it was a period of time when black slaves were actually sold in the marketplace. And that is why a lot of my friends, a lot of black guys don't even support Black Friday, because it's demeaning to them, to their culture, to their race group, you know. So how we got Black Friday, I have absolutely no idea. So that aside, you know, when it comes to the, you know, the yo-yo effect once again, well, Shafal, it's going to spiral like this year. It'll be high, on the highs, on the lows. If you look at Toyota, it was number one, not only for the last 10 years, but also for last month. Yeah, in South Africa, I think they sold, I think last month, 12,500 units itself. And if you look at Volkswagen, it was the second run up at only 4,900 they sold vehicles. On the commercial side of it, I think, you know, we're doing quite well on commercial, be it light, medium, and heavy, because of the increase for about 14.3% on sales itself. And, you know, when you consider all this, then you find, obviously, once again, we'll use the term yo-yo effect when it comes to diesel. You know, this country can be stabilized in a very, very uniform and a very subtle way, provided the government cuts off his share of 90% of his share from the money that, or basically from the cut that he makes from per liter of fuel and diesel. And he can actually bring the cost right down to about 19 rands a liter and still make a profit out of it. But he will refuse to do that, you know, because apparently the money has to be utilized in different
ways. Yeah, it seems as if we have lost Anwar Kasim there. But, you know, very eloquent indeed, talking about losing, you know, their share and many other things happening in the country. And as the important point that we made was, the president of this country is absent without leave. I believe he's also taken the Minister of Trade and Industry with him. Naledi Pandor is also in that group. And as Anwar says, Toyota once again coming to the fore as outstanding sales once again.